Supporting this community in the coming year. So we really hope you can join us next year, or next Sunday, even sooner than that. We'll be here in the service talking about that, and then we'll have an event actually after the service that we really hope you can stay here and join us for. There's also more adult RE classes coming up that you should know about, and over on the table right over there is a list of a bunch of them with a clipboard so you can sign up if you're interested in joining one of those classes. As always, we have our guest sign in the back. If you are a guest here, we'd love to know a little bit more about you so we can tell you a little bit more about us. So that guest sign is right in the back. There's also a worship diary back there where you can give us feedback about the service, something you liked, something you didn't like, something you'd love to see in a service sometime. And also, this is something I'm going to be repeating in a whole bunch of different places coming up. April 29th, that's the last Sunday this month, is our district assembly. Okay, it happens every year, and it's a gathering of all the congregations in our district, which is actually pretty big. It's not just the Bay Area. It goes up into Northern California, and it goes down into Central, and even gets a little bit of Nevada with Reno. So we'll have a whole bunch of Unitarian Universalists from around this area meeting up. In a bunch of past years, it's been in Fremont, so it's been really convenient for us. This year, it's at the Oakland Hotel, one of the hotels right near the airport. And we really want you all to go there. It's a really wonderful opportunity to meet other Unitarian Universalists, other people who share our values, other people that are doing exciting things. And so to really encourage you, it's Friday night, it's all day Saturday, and then there's a worship service Sunday, and we really want you to go. Yeah, you got a question about that? Pretty close. That's a good memory. So last year at the district assembly, this congregation ordained me officially as a minister. That's a great memory. And so it's not actually quite on the same date it was last year, but very close. And so the worship service is a really special one when a lot of people come together. So we don't hold worship traditionally here that day. So that's what I'm trying to really remind people of, is if you show up here on April 29th, there'll be someone sitting out here to remind you that we hope you go down the street a little farther up 880 to the airport and join us for worship there. I'll be there. I hope a lot of you will join us. It's a really fun event.
So you don't have to sign up in advance for the worship service?
You don't have to sign up. It's just a show up, just like here. And we'll even be seeing if we can get some carpooling going, and we'll get out directions and all that kind of stuff to make it as easy as possible for people to come there. But yeah, no sign up needed. You just show up at the worship service. Some of the stuff that happens Friday and Saturday you do need to register for. So thanks for that reminder, Jay. So that's just something to know about, and we hope you take advantage of. And also, there's some other stuff in your order of service that you might want to take a look at. There'll be no sandwich squad this month because of all the other stuff that's going on. We got spring break, so a lot of people are out of town. We have Easter, of course, and the Canvas going on, and that Canvas event coming up. So take a look at that. And with all of that being said, I'm going to invite Julie Ganslin up to give us a Canvas pulpitorial.
Sunday, everybody. My name is Julie Ganslin, and I've been a member of Mission Peak for almost a year. Speaking of happy Sunday mornings, I'd like to tell you a little bit about my traditional happy Sunday mornings. My husband, Stephen, and I would sleep in a little bit longer, then Stephen would make us a special Sunday morning breakfast. And while he cleaned out the kitchen, I would go upstairs with both newspapers, the three kitties, and Truman, hop on the bed with all my pillows I could find, snuggle up with my favorite throw, and read the paper in my jammies for hours. It was my time to simply relax, and it was heavenly. Then one Sunday, after many invitations, I finally accepted our neighbor and dear friend Janet and Drew Wilson's invitation to visit Mission Peak. From the moment I was greeted at the door with such warm, caring, happy, smiling greeters, I knew right then and there that Mission Peak was what I had been searching for so many years. I loved that first service, and I've loved all the services since. The choir, our Peak Rock, and so many friendly people that were so proud and happy to share their love of Mission Peak, for all of the members, the visitors, and the new members-to-be. I was overwhelmed with a feeling of great joy, peace, a love for a community I would learn a lot more about, a community that would and has changed my life in so many powerful, wonderful ways. Mission Peak is now my happy Sunday morning place to be, the place I look forward to go to meet my Mission Peak family, my loving, caring place. My place of inspiration, my place of motivation, my place of acceptance, of wonderful diversity, of laughter, my fun place to be. One of the many things I really enjoyed was that we sang the children off to their Sunday school classes. All the little shining lights, so precious, happily running to their class, just warmed my heart. Tom Baudet has a saying that always makes me giggle. He tells us that Motel 6 will keep the lights on for us. Well, I know Motel 6 and Tom Baudet will keep the lights on for us, and that while his commercials make me giggle, I know of a light that is much more meaningful to me. This light is of much more importance and much closer to my heart and my core values, and that's the brilliant light that Mission Peak keeps on for us every day, all day. A magical light that is always guiding our way, making the path we travel well lit. In reevaluating my treasure, I want to make sure that I'm doing all I can to keep Mission Peak's bright light growing even brighter. I'm hoping that you'll be able to do the same and know that every pledge, no matter how small, will ensure that Mission Peak, the Mission Peak we all love, will continue to be the brightest shining star we all want it to be. In closing, I would just like to say, happy Sunday morning to all my shining lights.
Today's invocation is number 671. It's entitled Freedom, and it's a responsive reading, so please join me in that. Our faith and knowledge thrive by exercise, as well as our limbs and complexion.
If the waters of truth flow not,
the light which we have gained was given us not to be ever staring on, but by it to discover onward things more remote from our knowledge.
Where there is much desire to learn, there is a necessity will be much harder.
Give me liberty to know, to utter, and to argue freely according to conscience above all liberties. For who knows not the truth is strong next to the Almighty? She needs no policies, no stratagems to make her victorious.
Let her in falsehood grapple, whoever needs truth, put it to the worst, and freeing and holding and encounter.
And with that, I would invite you to rise in body or spirit and join me in singing today's opening hymn. It's number 61 in this same book, Lo, the Earth Awakens Again. The words for our unison chalice lighting can be found in the order of service, and would Mallory Mitchmerheisen please come forward to help us light the chalice. We light this chalice to remind ourselves to treat all people kindly because they are our brothers and sisters, to take good care of the earth because it is our home, to live it's just harder to do than you'd ever think. Thank you. Thank you so much, Mallory. Paul, I turn it over to you.
Hello. Thank you. Nice guy, Jay. Any other children wish to come forward for the story? The pictures will be projected up there so everyone can see them the same, young and old. Aha. Pretty good, pretty good. Mm-hmm. Ah, that's probably from the chalice. Today is a holiday. Do you know the name of it?
Easter.
Oh, hey, who told you that? Ah, this is one of several holidays which come at about the same time in the spring, near the moment we call the spring equinox, which is when daytime and nighttime are about equal, halfway between winter, when nighttime is longest, and summer, when daytime is longest. Do you know the names of any other holidays that come about now? And a little bit, back there. Say that. Hello?
There you go.
I'm back on. Our English name for this holiday, Easter, is based on the name of the Scandinavian goddess Eostre, and her name comes from the Babylonian goddess Ishtar. Here is a picture of a statue of Ishtar. According to the Babylonians, in the fall, her lover died, and she was sad during the winter. But in the spring, her lover came back to life, and she was happy in the summer. Do you know anything else in nature that dies in the fall and then is alive in the spring?
Flowers.
Ah, very good.
Plants.
Mm-hmm. Ah, that's all true. And there are animals that lay their eggs in the fall and die and then... Mm-hmm.
Trees.
What?
Trees.
Some trees. The leaves on the trees especially, some of them. Almost 2,000 years ago, a Jewish teacher named Yeshu, or Jesus, was executed by the Roman Empire. On this day, his friend Mary Magdalene and a couple of others went to his tomb because they were sad about his death and found him alive. And here is a picture of Mary Magdalene crying at Jesus' tomb just before she turns around and sees him. They were very happy about this and went around with other friends telling people. Do you know anyone else that people thought was dead and then they thought was alive? Elvis is on my list as a possible answer. Something like that. I was also thinking of King Arthur, who according to myth is the once and future king. Yes, that's the one. Whatever. Okay, let's get back to the story. Some people think it was a miracle that Jesus came back to life. Others think he wasn't actually killed. Still others think that it was his good ideas that Mary Magdalene and the others thought were still alive. I'm a scientist, so I say that I do not know something unless there is confirming evidence or I can do an experiment. The only evidence about Jesus is what his followers wrote with no confirmation from others, and I can't do any experiment about people who lived so long ago, so I don't know. Are there any other things we don't know?
Whether Jesus was even real.
Ah. There's lots and lots of things we don't know.
Like, exactly.
That's a good one. That's a good one. I have a picture here, okay, of the moon, okay, taken by a NASA gamma ray observatory. Yes. It glows because of cosmic rays hitting it, but we don't know where the cosmic rays come from. And by the way, I challenge anyone to look at the set of pictures I have for this story and find out how they're all connected. Yes? Okay, but I think we don't really know. Something might come in from outer space and knock it out of its orbit. But, very good. There is another experiment that I can do about Jesus. Jesus was a teacher who went around explaining how to be good. I can do the experiment of trying to follow his teachings and see if the results are good. For instance, one of Jesus' teachings was to treat other people the way you would like to be treated. I keep trying this, okay? Do you think this is an easy experiment or a hard one?
Hard.
I think so, yes. Here is a picture of Jesus' parable about the Good Samaritan, in which a man helps someone who has been robbed and beaten up, even though that man might not have helped him. Jesus wasn't the only person who taught this, and he wasn't the only person who's been killed for what he taught. I've been reading about other people who taught about how to be a good person. I have found quite a few of them. Do you know the names of other famous people who taught how to be good? I've got all of them on my list, and I've got an even bigger list. Any others?
Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
Buddha.
Very good. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Plato.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Here is a picture of Black Elk with his wife and daughter. He was an Indian who accepted both American Indian tradition and Christianity. He taught that everyone in the world is all one big family. Thank you for joining me in this story about Easter. Now it's time to sing children to class. Light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Hello, are we back on here?
Yes, we are.
Okay. Our children form a great community. We are a spiritual community, and the word community is every bit as important as the word spiritual. So we set aside some time now for people to start conversations with whoever you happen to be sitting next to. At the end of this time, if there's someone new here who would like to be introduced, they can be introduced by the person who's been sitting next to them, and we will continue any conversations that we start now in our social time after the service with coffee and goodies. That, of course, is a part of the service that could easily last indefinitely. Is there anyone new here who has not been introduced before who'd like to be introduced by the person next to them? Welcome. Welcome. Thank you. We always are happy to see new people, and we're happy to see everyone we know coming back every Sunday, too. It is also now a time to share our joys and our concerns, which is not a time for announcements, but a time for sharing personal events. If you have something we will all be happy about, or a concern, a problem, or a sorrow that we can all help you bear. And please, when you speak, stand and give your name first. Thank you all. We seem to have mostly joys today and often about our family and the events we'd been involved in. This is great. We do feel concern every time there is the untimely loss of a member of the human family. And we do think about all such events. If anyone has a concern which has not been appropriate to share, please remember that we have a minister, Reverend Jeremy. We have a community minister, Reverend Barbara. We have a minister emeritus, Reverend Chris. And we have several pastoral associates who wear a special round button so that you can find them. So there should never be a time when you don't have an opportunity to talk to someone when you need to talk with someone. Let us now stand as we are willing and able and sing together hymn number 187, It Sounds Along the Ages.
How many of you know the story of where the Unitarian half of our names come from? Anyone know that story? One? Really? That's it? Two? Three? Yeah, I figured a bunch of you. Just waiting to see if I'm serious about asking a question. I'm really asking. So. There's a quiz later, so hope you really know. No. Today we're going to be talking about truth. about how many ways there are to tell a story. And the way some of our ancestors got named Unitarians is a great example of how many truthful ways there are to tell the same story. Some people like to tell the story of our Unitarian name from a theological perspective, to trace the concept of Unitarianism from the time of Christ to our present day. This story is about ideas, and its truth is about how one idea refuses to go away. And it begins something like this. As the early followers of Jesus began to write down and codify the words and memories they had of his life, different narratives began to take shape that were in competition with each other. And about 300 years after his death, a council was called in Nicaea, a city in present-day Turkey. The council was charged with making decisions about what was and what was not within the official Christian canon. That is, what would be the official truth going forward. And as you can imagine, many of the decisions were made based on who had the power and sphere of influence in that room at that council that month to get their way. And one line that was drawn in the sand was God in three parts, more popularly known as the doctrine of the Trinity. It was an idea created to make sense out of the three different ways that God appears to act in the stories that were being told of Jesus' life. In some parts of the story, God speaks from above with no body about Jesus and refers to him in paternal type terms. In another part of the story, a dove lands on Jesus and is meant to represent the physical blessing of this invisible God from above. And finally, we are told that Jesus himself was God in human form. So the Trinity was created to explain that all of these manifestations were the same God in different forms. One God, three parts. But some rejected this interpretation and believed in just one God without the division of roles. And they were dubbed Unitarians. And that camp lost the vote. Literally, they lost the vote at the Council of Nicaea. And thus, they were made one of the original heresies. Unitarianism is an original Christian heresy. And that's something that many people in this room are still proud of to this day. So, as I said, that's one way to tell the story of our name. It's to trace the evolution of that theological concept of Unitarianism. It would continue from the Council of Nicaea to several more instances through history of that theological concept of Unitarianism raising its head. Honestly, it's not my favorite way to tell the story because I don't think it has a lot of relevance to how we understand our present-day configuration. Let's just see how many of you, raise your hand if it really matters to you that we believe in a strict Unitarian theology. That's why you come here. Anyone? Yeah, we got one, two. So that brings some of us in here, but for a lot of us, it doesn't have a lot of relevance to how we consider this community to be. So some others like to tell it as a story about people, about the men and women who have called themselves Unitarian over the years, who were willing even to die for the right to identify this way. This story is one of symbolism, as these few people and the details of their struggle are meant to represent larger truths about our movement. In this telling of our story, you would learn about people like Michael Servetus. Servetus lived in Spain in the 16th century during the Renaissance. He was a gifted map maker, a scientist, one of those people who could just do everything. He was the first European even to correctly describe the function of pulmonary circulation. Unfortunately, it was his work as a theologian that got him burned at the stake. Specifically, his writings in which he developed a Christian non-Trinitarian doctrine. We tell this story to remind us that our ancestors were trailblazers. There were many more fascinating people like Servetus who were willing to blaze these trails for us. This makes this symbolic story about the men and women who died for the right to believe what we now take for granted, that freedom to explore our faith, a very engaging way to tell the story. But yet still others would choose to tell the story as a series of dates, marking important moments in our movement's history. This is a story of facts. It's truth and logic and rationality, maybe even something that could be tested a little bit. It would begin perhaps with the Edict of Torda in Transylvania in 1568. This was the first ever declaration of religious tolerance and was made by, you might not know this, but there was a Unitarian king, the only one, King Sigismund of Transylvania. He wanted to create a space where people could be free to believe what they wanted, not what the Catholic Church prescribed. So there's at least three different ways to tell where our Unitarian name came from. One that's theological, one that's symbolic, one that deals with known facts, and of course there are so many more ways. And although none of these stories sound the same, each one is true in its own way. When I tell the story of our name, I try to tell what I think is the theme that unifies the root metaphors, the unifying themes of all those stories. And for me, that means telling the story through the lens of religious freedom. This story reveals the truth that many early Unitarian ministers, like many people in this room perhaps, didn't particularly care about the theological difference between Trinitarians and Unitarians. They just wanted to be allowed to have an open and free conversation. In the early 17th century in America, people finally found an environment tolerant enough to let them begin using on the Bible all the new exciting tools that were being developed by social sciences. This would have been impossible in Europe at the time. One would instantly be arrested and locked up and would be lucky to get away with a humiliating public retraction, if not more serious repercussions. But in America, for the first time, people began using tools like text criticism on the Bible. And when they began dissecting the text from this basis, they discovered some issues. Like the fact that it was hard to miss that the Old Testament was the product of many hands and revisions and had serious discrepancies from one book to the next. And when the Synoptic Gospels of the New Testament were lined up, they too had serious disagreements on what the facts of the story were. And on top of that, major bedrock theological concepts like that doctrine of the Trinity simply weren't in the text, but rather were interpretation laid back upon it. That's to say, nowhere in the New Testament does it ever mention the word or concept of the Trinity, the winning idea from that long ago council in Nicaea. It must be inferred through the reading, and there are other valid interpretations beyond one God in three parts. Well, as you can imagine, even in this new tolerant place, this kind of free thinking and poking around really alarmed many of the traditional Christians in the early New World, especially the Calvinist ministers, who were at that point some of the most influential people in the American colonies. They understandably felt threatened by this work and decided that the best way to shut it all down would be to smear it as publicly and heinously as possible. And so they reached back into history and charged those doing this text criticism work on the Bible with one of those original heresies and called them Unitarians. It was like a swear word, kind of. Now, as I said, most doing this work didn't care about God in one part or three parts, but rather in setting the record straight about what we could and could not get from the text of the Bible. But rather than run from this smear campaign, they decided to claim the title proudly, hearing in it the echo of all those names and dates and theological concepts that through the years had been associated with not just an argument about how to understand God, but rather if we had the right to explore at all, to think freely and talk amongst ourselves about what we thought and felt about God, to find our own truths. And thus, our modern Unitarian movement began. We were a smear campaign. Which leads me finally to today, to Easter, and more specifically to what the truth of its story is. Because for me, as a Unitarian Universalist, and as someone who has studied the Bible with all these amazing tools of the social sciences, Easter is complicated. The main way the Easter story is told in traditional Christian communities is one of bodily death and resurrection. We are told that 3 days after dying on the cross and being entombed in his final resting place, Jesus came back to life and reappeared to some of his closest earthly friends in fully healed bodily form. But that's not the only way the story's been told. Just like with our name, there are many ways, many other ways, to tell this story. For instance, when those same trailblazing theologians in the early Americas began looking at the historical data, trying to test stuff, see what they could find, it became clear that the gospel that we have, the gospels, all the four that we put in that book, none of them were written until at least a few decades after the events in question. Mark is believed to be the oldest gospel, and it's thought to have been written between 20 and 40 years after Jesus' death. Think for a minute about how much a story can change in 20, 30, or even 40 minutes, let alone months, let alone years. And further, it's clear that the Gospel of Mark originally ended with Jesus dead in the tomb. No resurrection story. That's the first gospel. The piece that follows and begins that tale of a resurrection was appended over 200 years later. 200 years later, to bring it in line with how the later gospels evolved the story. In fact, every written record we have from the first 100 years after Jesus' death makes it clear that his resurrection, if talked about at all, was understood completely metaphorically. There was no claim of bodily resurrection until the early Jesus communities began to grow into a larger movement. And further complicating the true story of Easter, as Paul spoke about earlier, our Paul, not the Bible Paul, not the walrus Paul, but this Paul, the holiday that Christians have evolved to remember and mark this important part of their theology has been heavily influenced by the pagan climate it was created within. In ancient Anglo-Saxon myth, Ostara is the personification of the rising sun, as we heard about. In that capacity, she is associated with spring and is considered to be a fertility goddess. She is the friend of all children, and tell me if this sounds familiar. To amuse them, she changed her pet bird into a rabbit. This rabbit brought forth brightly colored eggs, which the goddess gave to the children as gifts. From her name and rites, the festival of Easter is derived. So it's no surprise that most of us are a little confused about what the heck it is we're celebrating this Sunday. That's how we got to rabbits and chicken eggs from Jesus. But just as all the different ways we can tell the story of our Unitarian name have that unifying theme of religious freedom, all the different stories that we can tell about Easter have the unifying theme of hope in the darkness, of rebirth after a long, cold winter, of life following in the footsteps of death. And so that's the truth I choose to focus on as a modern-day UU when this holiday rolls around every year. Just as it's inspirational for Christians to celebrate the resurrection of Jesus after the 40 dark days of Lent, just as people worship a sun goddess of fertility at this time of year, the earth is crying out with the celebration of hope over fear, of life over death, of light over darkness. And what I am reminded of is that there is always hope, even in the darkest of moments. When hope feels like the farthest thing from reality, it's there. It doesn't quite make as much sense here in the Bay Area where there's no bitter winter. But spend just one winter back east, locked inside for months of snow that obscures all light. And then you truly understand what a revelation, spring is. And so, whether the resurrection was literally of the body, or rather a gorgeous metaphorical flourishing of a beautiful message after the bodily death of a wise teacher, there is important truth in this story. Important truth in this story, in this ritual, in remembering at this time every year that even when the darkness feels all-encompassing, all the hope we need to continue lies dormant right there, in that seemingly broken moment. May we all carry the warmth of this truth with us whatever story we wrap it in. May it be so. Shay.
Thank you very much, Doug and Pat. We have many aspects. We're a community, we're a spiritual community, we're a beautiful musical community. We're a material community here in this space, and we are a monetary community. We need it all to keep functioning, so we will now collect an offering. And if this is your first time here, please let the basket pass by. We like to let newcomers be our guests. Thank everyone who has given. We also thank those who mail their pledges in, and we thank those who contribute through their volunteer time. It is all part of our community. Thank you. And now, please once again stand as you are willing and or able, to sing number 270. Number 270, O Day of Light and Gladness.
One quick note before I read the words of our benediction. If you are a parent with children here who are going to participate in the Easter egg hunt, if you could have them ready on the porch, our back front porch, whatever you want to call it right there, and wait for Sally to give the official go so that everyone can just. But now please hear these words of poet Denise Levertov. Marvelous truth, confront us at every turn, in every guise, iron ball, egg, dark horse, shadow, cloud of breath on air. Dwell in our crowded hearts, our steaming bathrooms, kitchens full of things to be done, the ordinary streets. Thrust close your smile that we may know you. Ashe, and go in peace.